The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Ed Tremblay from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Tar Heel Junior Historian magazine, North Carolina History for Students. Today I'll be reading from Volume 60, Number 2, the Spring 2021 issue, Making a Living, North Carolina Industries Over Time. I ran out of time in the last episode, was not able to complete the opening article, so I'm going to reread it in its entirety. From the Big Three to Biotechnology, North Carolina Industries Over Time, by Roanne Bishop, who is the director of the Mountain Gateway Museum and Heritage Center. Within the span of a century, North Carolina has progressed from being a land of small farms with no electricity and only horse-drawn equipment to ranking as one of the top 10 industrialized states in the nation. Indeed, today's Tar Heel State is a national leader in banking, manufacturing, health services, technology, and other industries. How did that happen? And what can we expect in the future? Read on. That's what this issue of Tar Heel Junior Historian is all about. For most of the 1900s, tobacco, textiles, and furniture were the powerhouses of North Carolina's economy. These big three industries employed thousands of workers and represented millions of dollars in investments and foreign exports. But for various reasons, all three industries were in decline by the end of the year 2000. Fortunately, new technology-driven industries had started up by then, thanks to government support and the efforts of scientists and researchers in the state. Pharmaceuticals, biotechnology, information technology, microelectronics, and telecommunications are now helping to drive a more diversified economy that offers cleaner, higher-paying, and less labor-intensive jobs, as well as new products and services. With the world-renowned Research Triangle Park situated in the Raleigh-Durham area, many top-flight universities nearby, and other research complexes located in Charlotte, Greensboro, and Rocky Mount, North Carolina seems well-positioned to explore possible future industries such as robotics and space travel. But the Tar Heel State wasn't always so fortunate. Lacking good roads and deep-water ports and having little capital, Colonial North Carolina didn't initially attract industry. Farm families made, grew, or raised most of what they needed and traded or sold any surpluses within their local community. Almost all early industries that did develop were dependent on natural resources. Tobacco, a crop introduced to early settlers by Native Americans, grew well in the sandy soils of the Piedmont and coastal plain, and quickly became the colony's primary export. Longleaf pine trees made North Carolina a world leader in the production of naval stores, tar, pitch, and turpentine, during colonial and antebellum times. The discovery of a 17-pound gold nugget in a Cabarrus County creek marked the beginning of the state's gold mining industry in the early 1800s. North Carolina's textiles industry, which arose during the 1820s, was based on cotton. Lumber and furniture production both relied on native hardwood forests, and the state's centuries-old pottery tradition, part of its folk arts and crafts industry, was grounded in red clay. Thus, North Carolina long remained an agrarian society, agrarian meaning of or relating to farms and farming. The American Industrial Revolution in the late 1800s helped shift North Carolina's focus away from raw materials, which it had for so long simply harvested or extracted or shipped elsewhere, toward manufacturing, mechanization, and a new factory-based workforce. The Tar Heel textiles industry was the first to change, moving from water and steam power to electricity during the early 1900s. Electricity eliminated the cotton mills' belt-driven machinery, which had often contributed to accidents and shutdowns, while providing better lighting and humidity controls. Increased demand for textiles during World War I boosted the industry. By 1923, North Carolina had become the nation's leading textile producer. World War II further spurred the industry. About the same time that North Carolina's textile industry began to boom, its furniture industry also took off. An agricultural depression during the 1890s forced many farmhands to take jobs in developing towns. Fledgling furniture factories took advantage of these unskilled workers, who also needed furnishings for their new urban homes. The High Point Furniture Manufacturing Company, the state's oldest furniture business, began production in 1888. Other furniture factories soon sprang up along the North Carolina Railroad corridor in cities such as Lenoir, Hickory, Thomasville, and Lexington. By 1939, the state was the nation's leading manufacturer of wooden household furniture. The opening of High Point's Southern Furniture Exposition eventually created the largest marketing center for home furnishings in the world. But tobacco was North Carolina's blockbuster industry. It soared after the Civil War when former Union soldiers created a demand for the mild-flavored smoking tobacco they had sampled during wartime. Washington Duke of Durham was the first to take advantage of the demand and begin large-scale tobacco manufacturing. But others soon followed, including R.J. Reynolds in Winston-Salem. James Bonsack's 1884 invention of a cigarette rolling machine revolutionized the industry. By 1890, when James B. Duke took the helm of the American Tobacco Company, North Carolina's tobacco industry had become recognized internationally. The Big Three continued to power North Carolina's economy through the mid-1900s, but by the century's third quarter, these industries were facing challenges. Health concerns about smoking prompted congressional hearings and a wave of civil lawsuits that hammered the tobacco industry. In the 1990s, free trade agreements and globalization created tremendous competition for the state's textile mills and furniture factories. Consequently, some companies closed, while others moved their operations abroad. Environmental concerns about industrial air and water pollution also dealt heavy blows. While the Big Three remain part of North Carolina's economy and culture, their fall has allowed some new industries to arise and others to expand. In 1960, Research Triangle Park opened as the state's first major industrial park. Banking became a major Tar Heel industry in the 1980s with the emergence of interstate banking. By the early 2000s, Charlotte had become a national financial center, second only to New York City. And in 2006, biotechnology received a rocket boost with the groundbreaking for the $1 billion North Carolina Research Campus in Kannapolis. At the same time, tobacco's decline caused farmers to diversify their crops. Since the 1990s, hog and poultry processing plants have made the state a major supplier of hogs, chickens, and turkeys. New uses for soy products have caused soybean production to soar. And North Carolina is now the nation's number one producer of sweet potatoes. With the advent of the internet and social media, the Tar Heel tourism industry was reaching new heights until the COVID-19 pandemic. And as the home of the world's largest military base at Fort Bragg, North Carolina continues to boast a strong military presence, an industry unto itself. Through diversification and rapid technological advances, North Carolina's industry has become stronger, our jobs more secure, and our lives easier in the early 21st century. While changes and challenges surely lie ahead, continuing governmental support and the ongoing efforts of scientists and researchers make the state's industrial future appear promising and bright. Here are the captions for the photographs that accompany this article. Third floor interior photograph of Melrose Mill in Raleigh, circa 1915. A hand carver works on the leg of a chair at the Tomlinson Chair Manufacturing Company in 1936. Storefront in Chatham County, circa 1910. Fisherman at Edenton and Brickell. No date, it's estimated to be 1935 to 1940. Tobacco layout in Whiteville in Columbus County, August 1941. Before computers, everything had to be handwritten or typed on a typewriter. Often, large companies employed mostly women to type individual documents. The secretarial pool shown here worked at the Durham Life Insurance Company in Raleigh in 1933. What kind of computer do you use? This is what a computer looked like in 1959. The UNIVAC 1105 filled this room in the basement of Phillips Hall at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. It was one of three computers of its type and was intended primarily for the United States Census Bureau. It cost $2.4 million. Improvements to the basement, including 16-inch concrete walls to protect it from nuclear attack, added $1.2 million. The UNIVAC was 60 feet long, weighed 19 tons, and used 7,200 vacuum tubes. Its memory was less than 50 kilobytes, or one 8.5 by 11 document. Its printer had a speed of 600 lines per minute. In 2021, Charlotte in Mecklenburg County is the largest city in North Carolina. It's also the second largest banking center in the United States. And here is a sidebar article. Think about it. People work to make a living, which means to earn money to pay for things like a place to live, clothes to wear, and food to eat. Sometimes people love their jobs. Sometimes people don't, or wish for something better. Here are some things that might affect what jobs a person can get. Where they live, what education they have, what their skills and talents are, what their race or gender is, how many other people want the same job. Can you think of others? How might history affect what jobs a person can get? Here are a few ideas. Can you think of others? The economy, good times and hard times. Natural disasters like hurricanes, wars, new inventions, the population, how many people live in one area. Next article is What's in a Tag? By Sally Bloom, who is an educator at the North Carolina Museum of History. How do you connect history, geography, and economics, along with technology, industry, and labor? With artifacts, of course, but did you know that clothing can be artifacts too? Look at the tags in your jeans, t-shirts, towels, and blankets. Where were they made and what were they made of? Despite differences in locations and materials, they all have something in common. They are textiles. Textiles is described in the dictionary as cloth or fabrics that are woven or knit, usually from flexible yarns or threads, also the business of making textiles. It's likely that your textiles were made recently by people you don't know in places far away. But if you had lived in colonial North Carolina, you might have made them. Most European settlers and enslaved peoples made their own fabrics, from wool and linen and eventually cotton. Wool, for example, involved raising and shearing sheep, combing wool, spinning fibers with a drop spindle or spinning wheel, and weaving on a loom, plus dyeing, cutting, and sewing. Exhausting. Textile mills sped the process of turning fibers into yarn and cloth using the rushing waters of the Piedmont's streams. The first mills were built in the early 1800s. By 1860, some 45 cotton and woolen mills were in operation across the state. along with the Piedmont's water power, North Carolina's mild climate, abundance of cotton, and a large population of inexpensive labor, including enslaved workers, primed the state for textile industry growth. The Civil War changed almost everything, including the textile industry. North Carolina's textile mills were contracted to make clothing, blankets, and more for Confederate troops. Toward the end of the war, Union troops destroyed some textile mills, but many were rebuilt in the post-war years. By 1870, around 170 textile mills were at work. While the textile industry grew in North Carolina, education to support it did too. In 1899, a textiles department was created at the North Carolina Agricultural and Mechanical College, which later became North Carolina State University. In 1925, this department expanded into a school of textiles. World War I again boosted the need for military items, and the textile industry responded, aided by the shift to electricity. By 1923, the state led the nation in textile production with some 350 mills in operation, employing thousands. These workers left farms seeking paid labor. Beginning in the late 1800s, many textile companies built entire villages for employees and their families. While such communities sound ideal, in reality, the villages served the mill workers more than, In reality, the villages served the mill owners more than the workers. As management kept close watch on workers and village businesses kept the workers in debt. Women and children, aged 12 and up, were paid less than male workers. Working 10 to 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, in severe settings, made for unhealthy living conditions. The majority of workers were white. Segregation laws and norms of the 1900s meant that few blacks were offered mill work, and the jobs that were available to them were the lowest paid. Following passage of civil rights legislation in the 1960s, textile companies began to hire more black workers, despite lingering concerns of some white employees. Labor unions sought to represent workers in the late 1800s and early 1900s, although many workers refused to participate. Strikes often ended in violence. In 1929, at Gastonia's Loray Mill, strikes resulted in the death of a mill worker, organizer and songwriter Ella Mae Wiggins, whose song Mill Mother's Lament chronicles workers' challenges. Union efforts focused attention on the plight of mill workers, especially children, but few textile mill workers belonged to unions in North Carolina, where very few unions even attempted to operate. During the 1930s, federal laws helped improve some of the worst workplace conditions. For decades, natural fibers, silk and cotton, had dominated the industry. Beginning in the early 1900s, synthetic fibers like rayon and nylon became important in textiles, especially for military supplies. During World War II, North Carolina led textile production for the United States military. Growth of the industry continued in the post-war boom. By 1960, North Carolina's 1,110 mills employed 55% of the state's manufacturing workers, with a value of $2.8 billion. Those big numbers meant that textiles mattered to the state's economy and to the many people supported by such work. By the 1970s, changes arrived in the form of new environmental rules, increased awareness of unhealthy working conditions, and the rise of cheap labor and inexpensive construction costs in Asia, South America, and Central America. Mergers, closures, and decline marked the period from the 1980s through the early 2000s, with tens of thousands of jobs lost. Today, the textile industry in North Carolina continues to adapt. New technologies and research in fibers, high-tech fabrics, and non-woven materials mean that the textile industry, with more than 600 manufacturers, remains a force in our state and beyond. Keep checking those tags for centuries of history and more. Here are the captions that accompany the photographs with this article. The interior of a textile mill in Rockingham, Richmond County, circa 1960 to 1968. Postcard of the Marion Manufacturing Company Mill in Marion, McDowell County. Group portrait of seven North Carolina State College Style Show winners at the Textile Exposition and Style Show held at the Textile School, North Carolina State College, Raleigh, April 10th to 11th, 1929. Participating colleges including Meredith, Peace, and St. Mary's. The cover of the September 1929 Labor Defender magazine, published by the International Labor Defense Organization. It shows mill workers who were in prison for striking at the Luray Mill in Gastonia. Board of Directors of the Coleman Manufacturing Company, circa 1899. In 1898, Warren C. Coleman began constructing a cotton mill in Concord in Cabarrus County. Coleman, formerly enslaved, became one of the wealthiest African Americans in the South, literally rising from work collecting rags to riches. The Coleman Mill was the first black-owned and operated cotton mill in the United States. It would eventually employ 300 workers. And here is a sidebar article, A Closer Look, Textiles, by Jessica Pratt, who is curator of education outreach and the Tar Heel Junior Historians Association program coordinator at the North Carolina Program Museum of History. Cotton production. Our state's textile mills benefited from being so close to the raw material they needed to make yarn and cloth, cotton. Cotton is a cash crop, meaning it isn't grown to be eaten. It grows well in the Piedmont and coastal plain regions of North Carolina. Through the mid-1900s, most of the work to grow and harvest cotton was done by hand. This was hard work, initially for the enslaved workers of North Carolina's cotton farms and plantations, and later for the sharecroppers and tenant farmers who did not own the land they farmed. But not all the cotton grown here went right to our state's mills. Cotton was also being exported to other states and countries. By 1887, 170,000 bales were being shipped each year through the port in Wilmington. During World War I, there was a huge demand for cotton, but this led to an overproduction of the crop and falling prices. Starting in the 1920s, farmers faced an infestation of the boll weevil, a bug that destroys cotton plants. Boll weevils are now considered to be eradicated, removed, or destroyed, and the work to plant and harvest cotton is done with machines. New materials. Today, North Carolina is the seventh largest producer of cotton in the United States, and the world still uses cotton more than any other fiber. But did you know? It's not just the white cotton fibers that are useful. Other parts of the plant, such as the seeds, are used to make cooking oil and other products. In 2020, North Carolina was able to call on its long history as a leader in textile manufacturing to focus on an urgent need, making personal protective equipment, or PPE, such as masks and gowns needed by frontline workers in the fight against COVID-19. Many companies across the state that typically produce socks or clothing switched to masks, including High Rock Hosiery Mills in Lexington, Kitts Bow and Old Fort, Therafirm and Hamlet, and others. Apple Rock of Greensboro went from making trade show displays to isolation gowns, along with Saab Barracuda LLC of Lillington, which usually makes camouflage netting for the military. The next article is Stories from the Collection. Did you know that objects tell stories? Your North Carolina Museum of History collects these artifacts, the things that people create, use, and leave behind to bring the state's history to life. Here are a few of those stories. Shipping Crate, 1885. Blackwell's Genuine Bull Durham was one of the most well-known tobacco brands manufactured in North Carolina in the late 1800s and early 1900s. The product originated in Durham, and its bull logo, originally based on a bull's head pictured on containers of Durham mustard from Durham, England, was recognized worldwide. agricultural equipment, 1920s to 1960s. Have you ever heard of a double disc drill? How about a walking planter? These tools were used by the family of John Landrum Jackson to plant seeds for crops on their farm in Mill Spring in Polk County. The Jackson family bought the farm in 1842, and it remained in use until the 1980s. The family grew tobacco, corn, grain, and hay. They also kept bees and spun cloth. Glass Memory Bank and Advertisement, circa 1970s. By the mid-1900s, North Carolina had grown beyond the big three industries of tobacco, textiles, and furniture, and was home to a wide array of manufacturing businesses. Corning Glasswork made glass capacitors, devices to store electrical energy, and memory banks for NASA in Raleigh from the 1960s until the company was sold in 1987. Textile mill tools, 1900s. Textile mills had hundreds of giant, heavy metal looms like the ones displayed in our exhibit, The Story of North Carolina. But those looms depended on some small objects to operate and weave cloth. This bobbin is one of many thousands that would have fed threads into the mill's looms. Workers used reed hooks to pull threads through a loom's comb-like reed to set it up for weaving. This bobbin and this reed hook were used in Randolph Mills in Randolph County. North Carolina Medicines, 1970s. Burroughs Wellcome manufactured all three of these products. The company was one of the many pharmaceutical businesses that manufacture medicines, that joined other high-tech companies with locations in Research Triangle Park, or RTP, which is located between Raleigh and Durham. Construction on the first building in RTP began in 1960, making RTP one of the oldest and largest planned research and development companies in the United States. And the three products that are in the photograph are Neosporin ointment, Actifed tablets, and Marazine for motion sickness. And here's a description about the photo on the cover of this issue. We don't know the name of this worker who also appears on the cover of this issue of Tar Heel Junior Historian, but we know that the photo was taken in 1937 while she worked as a spinner at the Pickett Yarn Mill in High Point in Guilford County. The spinning machines twisted cotton fibers into thread or yarn, which was then woven into fabric. Like other mill workers, she may have worked as much as 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, for very low wages. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of North Carolina History. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Ed Tremblay, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.